This conference will now be recorded.
Terry Hill, our senior advisor at the National Rural Health Resource Center, is going to be facilitating today's call. So I will turn it over to Terry to introduce our hospital speaker today.
Thank you very much and good morning, everyone. The topic of the day is quality, and I can't think of a time, at least in recent memory, that this subject has been more important. From a variety of different perspectives, quality is becoming just hugely important, not only for its own sake, in terms of the, you know, superior care of our patients and our families, et cetera, because it's being factored into our financial formulas as well. Kind of in background, just a little bit of background on this, it is becoming increasingly clear to us here at the center, and I think to other organizations, the American Hospital Association, the National Rural Health Association, et cetera, that we're currently in a really dramatic transition from our current payment system to a new payment system. And kind of in that regard, we're moving from a system that basically rewarded us for the number of procedures we did, pretty much basically pay for volume, moving into this new area, which is pay for value. And I think it is important as we look at the transition to kind of figure out what are the critical paths for rural hospitals to kind of move into this new dimension of value. It's at least our opinion, and I think the opinion of most people I know, that this particular journey, this transition, is driven by the marketplace, certainly as much as it's driven by the Accountable Care Act. That in essence, we know that the bigger systems, the Mayo Clinics, the Cleveland Clinics, the, you know, you name it, the big systems of the world are all moving very rapidly into this value direction. We know that last count, there are well over 600 accountable care organizations that have developed across the country. And we all believe that rural hospitals are going to have to find their place in this new value-driven system. Kind of in that regard, as we look at what is value, I want to really compliment the work of the Louisiana Hospital Association that several years ago wrote a white paper talking about what was going to be important for rural hospitals kind of into the future. And they very strongly stressed the need to both provide quality care and to document that care, as well as to look at the kind of cost savings that we're going to be able to identify and document as well. So the topic of the day, as I indicated, I think is extremely important. And as we look at quality as how it's being defined, I think we're going to look at a couple of different aspects here that we're going to profile with the two hospitals that are being featured and the leaders of those hospitals who are going to be the speakers. Part of it is really going, quality is going to have a whole lot to do with care management and care coordination as we move patients from our hospital into different settings, as you know, really minimizing our readmission, so that whole transitions of care is becoming hugely important and in essence is being factored in as a major part of this quality formula. A second major piece has to do with customer and patient satisfaction, you know, what we get measured on in HCAHPS as well. And that's just another dimension of quality. Both of those dimensions will carry over into how we identify that quality, how we score that quality, and how in the end we get paid. Because on the value-based payments, we not only are going to have to do this care more efficiently at lower cost, but we're going to have to prove that the quality is being provided as well, or else we're going to be penalized, or we're not going to get the bonuses that might be available to us as well. I think that was very nicely articulated in the paper by the Louisiana Hospital Association, as I indicated a couple of years ago, and they are currently working on another version of that white paper, and their hospital administrators met earlier this week to move forward in that as well. So I'm really pleased to have the speakers we have today, because I think we can learn a lot. I can certainly learn a lot from their experiences. Joanne Emgee is the CEO of Sparta Community Hospital, and Joanne's been there for more than 30 years and has been CEO since 1996. So Joanne, at least in my opinion, just as our other speakers, has been an industry leader, and particularly in the state of Illinois. She is basically the hospital's located in southern Illinois. It's got a population in that service area of about 20,000 people. They're a full-service critical access hospital, and they have 6 rural health clinics. They also provide home health services and a wide variety of specialty services. She's going to be joined today by Lori Clinton, who's the chief nursing executive from Sparta Hospital, who's been there about 10 years. And so Lori is going to talk about, you know, particularly, I assume, the nursing aspect and the impact upon nursing culture, et cetera. Blake Kramer has been the administrator of Franklin Medical Center in Louisiana since 2010. Mr. Kramer is an attorney and was the hospital's legal counsel kind of prior to becoming administrator. And Blake has, Joanne and Lori are going to be talking about their care management experience. And then Blake is going to be talking more about looking at how to improve customer and patient satisfaction. First of all, I should also acknowledge that this is part of the Rural Hospital Performance Improvement Program, which is funded by the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy. We're nearing the end of this program year. This will be our last performance management group call. But I also always want to acknowledge our really stellar staff, Bethany Adams and Rhonda Barkas, as well as Leslie. They really do a terrific job. So it's always a pleasure to be associated with them and to be working on this project as well. So kind of with that background, I want to really move into kind of some questions for our speakers. And the first one, and maybe I'll start with Joanne and Lori, is kind of what was the incentive to move into this care management transitions of care project that you did with Mary Gio, a consultant from Stroudwater? Joanne or Lori?
Yes, Terry, this is Joanne. I'll start with that. When we looked and evaluated our care management, we actually looked at this as an opportunity to analyze our process and evaluate our opportunities for improvement. We wanted to review our utilization resources, our utilization review, how we coordinated care between our primary care physicians and our hospitalist program, which was relatively new. We wanted to look at discharge planning and recognizing we had to move towards the transition of care model, as well as certainly look at patient satisfaction. So as we moved into the project, those certainly were our objectives that we wanted to address.
Joanne, was there any concern about kind of the shifting into a different model? Are you feeling pretty comfortable with the critical access hospital funding? I'm just wondering if there's any motivation coming about from kind of this changing and payment system.
Oh, certainly. You know, what we have today may not be what we have in the future. So we're always looking and trying to analyze where we would be under a different model of payment.
Why did you decide to really focus in on the care management and the transitions of care in particular?
Well, at the time, because one, our hospitalist program was new, we were having some maybe disconnects between between the primary care and the hospitalist, between and also dealing with some patient satisfaction issues, also having some challenges by making sure that patient was in the right status from the point of entry. So those were all things that we recognized we were opportunities for improvement.
Okay. Terrific. Blake, let's shift over to you. Your focus was more on your customer satisfaction, patient satisfaction, HCAHPS scores. Can you talk a little bit about why you chose that focus?
To be honest, the hospital here unfortunately had a very negative public image for one thing, and there was a good deal of baggage that we were trying to overcome from a public perception aspect. But there was another thing that kept catching our attention. When we look at our HCAHPS surveys, we always noticed that the individual items would receive fairly high rankings a lot of time, but the overall score at the end and the question of would you recommend this hospital, those remained fairly low. And so we were trying to get some additional insight into how to sort of get those high individual scores to translate into a higher score on the overall rating.
And you are not a critical access hospital. You're a PPS hospital, Blake. In essence, where were you it was more particularly that particular will you recommend score that you were trying to drive up? What did you perceive to be part of the problem? Was there anything in particular, old history or?
It was the old history to a large extent, because it was always an amazing thing when you'd round as an administrator and you'd ask the patients questions, everything okay, everything okay, everything okay. And universally, you'd get positive responses from everybody. But then when it would come back as, would you recommend this hospital? No. What would you rank your stay at from 1 to 10? Well, it was, say, a 6 or maybe a 7. We were revisiting that with nursing staff and the people who had immediate point of care contact with the patient, it did tend to be, oh, well, this is just a Band-Aid station. And it was how we were going to get people to realize that if you're getting good care for the whole visit, maybe it's not just a Band-Aid station. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think it's a really common problem as well, is that what we see in so many of these rural communities is stories that might be a dozen years old continue to kind of stay out on the street. And it strikes me that so many hospitals kind of fight this bigger is better image that's there as well. So tell us a little bit about kind of the project itself. You also engaged Mary Gio. So Mary Gio, who many of you know, somebody who's been working in the Delta for years, been working with us for years. Talk a little bit about the project itself. What did you do?
Mary came in, did a full sort of walkthrough of the hospital, all the service lines, met individually with directors. And then a lot of it was essentially very intensive focus on the subjective experience. And I think that was sort of the difficult thing for people to start putting their minds into is, you know, not just how does that patient feel in terms of are they hurting or are they not, but going above and beyond, dealing with their comfort level, dealing with the accessibility of their family, not just to them as a patient, but to information about what was going on. Each individual medicine, you know, when you change out their IV, just explain what you're doing. And focusing a lot more on that subjective idea of comfort than on just the, I guess you'd say, base clinical outcome, for lack of a better term.
Blake, so much of this really gets down to kind of the point of contact with the kind of frontline folks that are working with the patients. What sort of things did Mary do to kind of help engage those folks or get them to see the kind of the personal contact, et cetera? Because so much of this has to do with culture. Talk a little bit about kind of those discussions or what your staff thought and, you know, were they resistant? Give us a little feeling of the experience that took place.
Well, a lot of it was, again, very one-on-one, very much associated with a lot of discussion about how would you feel if it was you, how would you feel if it was your mother, your father. How do you feel, for example, one of the ideas that Miss Mary introduced was the idea of thank you cards for different service lines, even on an outpatient basis. And the idea was, well, how do you feel when you get a thank you card? Well, that makes me feel good. Well, so is it really that much effort to do that? Putting notices in the room, when the room's cleaned by a housekeeper, the housekeeper's name and contact is put there so that if the patient, for whatever reason, if they're dissatisfied with the condition of the room, they can speak to that person directly. And, you know, if they have same thing with dietary, if they think that the food is not to their liking, call up the dietary manager, get her up there and have a conversation with the patient. One thing that we figured out talking with Miss Mary is the more visibility staff members have to the patient, and it's not just they see the nurse every now and then, the more they get the idea that there's this whole team of people who are trying to help take care of them. And so you really try to increase the visibility of each individual staff person to that patient. And it really enhances their idea of, wow, look at all these people who are dedicated to making me get better.
And Blake, I think you hit on something that's really important that we keep hearing over and over again, is that the why absolutely needs to be explained to the staff. You know, telling the staff that, you know, you want to do better customer service because they're going to get higher HCAHPS scores, it's just not very motivational for them. It's motivational for those, it's for your CFO and for yourself, et cetera. But it really have to get down into some of the emotional aspects. And I think that's what you're saying here too. How did you feel during this experience? If this was your mother, how would you like to have her treated, et cetera? And that explaining of the why takes some time, but you know, it strikes me this seems to be part of the methodology that I hear you speaking about. It's getting down beyond just the physical processes into some of the emotional piece that is so a part of a patient's experience. And it isn't just the patient, it's the whole family in that regard as well.
Correct.
So in essence, then, talk a little bit about kind of what, more from a logistics standpoint, you know, kind of what happened when Mary came in, what have you kind of done? I'll ask you about the outcomes later, but talk a little bit about the process a little bit more, if you will.
For one thing, the department directors had to keep a much closer scrutiny on their individual employees, and, you know, even at random, pull a patient and just ask them, well, you know, how'd it go? How, you know, was there something we could do better? You know, it's one thing for them to get a survey asking them that question. It's another thing to have somebody take the time to engage them one-on-one and somebody at a director level more than that to find out what we could have done better. I'm going to be honest, we did have to replace some staff and even replace some directors as far as that goes, simply because they could not make that move that you were just speaking of focusing on the more subjective, emotional aspects of the patient experience. They were, you know, clinically, they were very sound, but if you can't keep the patient not only cared for from a clinical aspect, but from a comfort and emotional aspect, it's not going to do you any good, especially with regards to your HCAHPS. So from the director standpoint, there was a lot more one-on-one staff scrutiny, a lot more one-on-one patient engagement. From the ground level staff, it was essentially knowing that they were being observed in this. There was accountability for getting on board or not getting on board with the project. But once it was explained and once the sort of unmotivated people were weeded out, it's definitely caught on. It's now part of our orientation and education process. So we're very much focused on hardwiring these types of things into just the everyday behavior of the staff.
Yeah, and I really like the concept of hardwiring as well. And the other thing that I was struck by your comment about, sometimes, and this is so hard to do in small towns, you just have to get rid of the folks that aren't going to fit into the culture that you're trying to drive. And that's very difficult to do, but I think you're indicating here that in order to make this work, sometimes there's just, you've got to find other folks, and it's difficult. I think we totally get that in that regard, but in many cases it's essential such. You know, it seems to me that as I'm looking at some of the notes here in your experience that that you seem to have some aspects here of case management as well. I've got in my notes that it became kind of a part of, as part of that customer satisfaction, you know, kind of moving those patients through the system must be important as well. Did that factor in as well?
You cut out on me there, Mr. Hill. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Did as you moved into this, you know, looking at customer service, did care coordination and case management come up as something important as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We had to make some changes there. We actually took the quality department and rolled it into the case management department. That was absolutely, I think, a huge move for us. The bottom line is that patient's disposition in the hospital, case management's already up working with that patient. So as far as understanding that they aren't pleased about this or that that has to do with their treatment while they're in there, they're already there doing it, so you might as well make that part of their role as well. And coordinating their discharge with the family and the home health or the nursing home or whatever, keeping that patient informed, letting them know what's going on and why we're having to do the things we're doing, why they can't maybe go to the nursing home they want to because there's no bed availability or whatever the reason may be. Case management is already so heavily engaged with the patient experience. Like I said, we just essentially took quality and merged it into that department.
Okay. Very interesting. I'm going to turn the focus now back over to the Sparta Hospital, which really had a care management transition of care project. And I'd like either Joanne or Lori to talk about what actually happened. You had Mary Gio as your consultant as well. Tell us a little bit about what happened in that consultation. Before you get to the outcomes, kind of what was the process itself and what were you doing?
Okay, I'd like to start by introducing two other employees we had join us. Sean Powers is our utilization review nurse and case manager, and Ruth Holloway, the quality and risk management. They were a big part of making all of this happen and it directly affected our good outcome. So they're here to answer questions as well.
Terrific.
Okay, so we also had Mary, and she came back in January of 13, and we started with an opening meeting with all managers at a department level and went through the hospital tour, and then we set our expectations. We were on the same page because we included four different aspects in ours. It was not just care case management. It was transition of care and reduction in readmissions, swing bed program development and assessment, and emergency and operational improvement projects. So ours was really big. She sat down and met with each individual that was involved in any one of these areas and took notes. We went so far as to set up meetings with our two long-term care facilities, and Mary discussed our transition of care with both of the directors of nurses and administrators at the nursing homes. So she learned a lot and had notes, and she had thoughts immediately just following our open discussions. From there, we just branched out to separate meetings on separate items. Every time we left the meeting, we all had thoughts in our heads what we were going to do. So we just ran with every suggestion she had pretty much. She shared all of her documents with us. We had a whole folder of just nothing but documents. What we went with, one good thing we did is we trained all of our nurses aides to become restorative nurses aides. So when physical therapy, occupational therapy wasn't here, the patient's care did not just stop from an OTPT standpoint. So we made rules on all of our swing beds, on getting up out of bed for meals. The nursing staff can do a lot of the tasks when they're not there. We had an open house and showcased our swing bed unit. We communicated with 9 outlying hospitals that we simply was not getting referrals from on swing bed. So our name's now been added to the list. Mary was here for 2 days. Following that, we developed a team and we met every 2 weeks for a while, then we went every month. After following every meeting, everyone left with a list of tasks to do. At the next meeting, they come back with their list completed. We just didn't give up, not even for a week. I mean, we continued forward. We set our goals high, and we actually succeeded with the goals we set. TTOT was a big part of the swing bed that we really had to change our focus on how to write appropriate goals, what was an appropriate patient to put in the swing bed unit. And we learned a lot about some skilled nursing that we were missing out on because we really didn't understand what all we could keep for nursing alone. So we really, really learned a lot. We expanded our swing bed program. Our census hasn't just gone through the roof, but it has definitely improved. But the knowledge is what really, really improved on our end. And from the frontline staff up, they took to this. You know, we involve them, and we do that a lot here. We involve the people that's going to be involved in the outcomes and get their opinions and their thoughts on things. So they were highly involved in everything that we did, so then they took ownership. The CNAs were just tickled. I mean, just smiling ear to ear, proud. You know, when we walked down the hall and all their patients were up, they'd have them in the activity room playing checkers, playing cards, putting puzzles together. So it really all fell right into place for us. Ruth or Sean?
Yeah, I mean, from the swing bed standpoint, that's what it was getting the whole team on the same page. And they have definitely done that. And like Lori said, taken ownership of it. So the swing bed's not just run by the care plan nurse or, you know, just a couple of individuals saying this is how it's going to be. It's the entire team has input. We've included in our interdisciplinary care plan meetings that we do weekly, we have dietary, we have respiratory, we have nursing, we have risk, we have social services, we have the whole gamut of everyone in there so that we're just doing a really good job communicating and working together as a team, which, of course, then improves the outcomes and the patient satisfaction of the patients that are utilizing the swing bed unit. Something that I think has been kind of a reflection that we've improved is getting calls from the community that have heard about the swing bed program wanting to know what exactly gets you into a swing bed unit, how, you know, if I'm having a procedure somewhere else, how do I come back to you? And I think that just kind of reaffirms that we're doing the right thing.
We ordered new white communication boards, too, for all of our inpatient rooms, and these boards just include everything on them. I think that's improved communication a lot. I mean, a lot of their questions they have, they just look up at the board and they know. They know exactly who to ask for what and what's going on. They're really, really nice and a great addition to our swing bed program. And through all of this, we have reduced, and another component of it was the readmission rate. We have reduced that from 13.9% to 10%, and that was a whole nother program in itself. We actually reevaluate every 30-day readmission we get on a document. It looks at could they have been discharged too soon? Should we have kept them another day? Was it a different diagnosis, a new diagnosis? We meet with the hospitalist then and show her what we've come up with. We together try to determine what maybe we could have done differently. So we've changed a lot of our processes on discharge planning, to reduce readmission rates. We also looked at our emergency room transfer rate because it was so high, we thought we were losing a lot of patients through transferring to other hospitals. We've reduced that from 8% to 6%. And that, again, was what can we keep, what can't we keep? Do we need to educate the physicians on the nurse's skill level? We don't have an ICU here, but we do keep higher acuity patients here than a small community hospital actually does. Our swing bed average daily census has only gone from 2 to 2.3, but some of these months we've actually had 6, which is very high for us. So it doesn't seem like it's much, but overall it is. If we could have included more of a time frame, it would have been higher. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, what about your patient satisfaction scores? Did they go up?
Yeah, that's what we were just getting to. Mary gave us so much good ideas on that. I mean, her documents and her ideas were just really great. The communication with the RNs went from 80 to 86%. Medication communication went from 57% up to 90%, and discharge information went from 92 to 95%. We actually made like flashcards bound together with a little ring that went through new medications, possible side effects, listed out the most frequent used medicines. So when they go in there and hang a new antibiotic, they flip to their card and know exactly what to tell the patient. This is a new medication. You're getting it for this reason. You might expect to see these things. We do the same thing at discharge. Before that, we really wasn't doing a good job with explaining this is a new medicine, so we're going to be watching you for this or that, or call me if you see this. So we think that played a huge role in the improvement in our satisfaction scores on medication communication.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting. This particular project, I think, really has some implications for a variety of reasons. One is because you're kind of, you know, doing this care management, care organ, you know, care coordination, improving your swing bed program, and again, building your customer satisfaction. Better outcomes, better readmissions. But part of the reason that I think it's so important is we've seen some early kind of innovation projects that for critical access hospitals that are specifically focused in on the swing bed program. I think we've known for quite some time that swing beds, you know, many critical access hospitals are not really maximizing them. And what we're discovering is that some of the systems, and I'll name the Mayo system in particular, which has 12 critical access hospitals. Mayo has basically been consciously upgrading the quality and the care coordination in their swing bed programs in those 12 hospitals. And the Mayo, the big hospitals in Mayo in Rochester, and then they have another hospital in Eau Claire, have been referring patients out to the critical access hospitals into their swing bed programs. So in essence, basically what has happened is that the financial performance of the 12 hospitals in the Mayo system has improved dramatically. They've all been financially successful. It's had a major impact, and this has all been documented as well. But the real challenge is it couldn't have been done without the care coordination work done as kind of a preliminary piece in order to make it, attractive to the referring big healthcare centers. And really, as I indicated, the other thing that's really very important about that this demonstration project is that, in essence, both of the big referral centers in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and Rochester, Minnesota, documented a positive financial outcome for them as well. So a 500% increase in the number of transfers out of the big hospitals into their critical access hospitals, et cetera. So I find that really pretty exciting. The only thing is that in order to actually make that, and by the way, they also were able to improve their quality substantially as well. So the patient satisfaction was higher in the critical access hospitals. The quality
was better, et cetera. So all of that has been documented, and it strikes me that the Sparta Hospital, through this program, has really positioned itself to do more post-acute care, which I think is a really pretty exciting possibility for critical access hospitals in particular. So congratulations on that, and it strikes me that it's been a really good project. Blake, I'm going to move over to you again to talk a little bit about, you know, kind of what sort of outcomes have you experienced with this program, again, focusing in on customer and patient satisfaction.
Well, you know, I'd focus a little bit before on that overall rating of the hospital. We've seen almost a 10% increase in that. We've gone from a low of 61% up to 69%. So that's been a huge move, and the trend is upward ever so slightly. So we're definitely hoping that that continues. We did have some of our lower scores on the other HCAHPS items. Also, we saw some big increases in the nursing communication went from 79% to 85% positive. The doctor communication went from 84 to 89. So a lot of things moved in the right direction on that, and we did get some good moves on our medicine communication too. That was a problem that we had consistently, and it was always an issue, and it went from 57% to 73%.
Blake, as you look at kind of how you're going to sustain this over time, again, it's, you know, that if we're only coming in making improvements, you know, and next year, you know, that we're going to slide back to where we were before. What sort of things are you doing to kind of sustain this performance over time?
For the employees that were here when we initially implemented this, I really think that it helped when we made some of the staff changes we did. Negative employees don't just have that negative effect on the patient experience. They also have a negative effect on your good employees because they don't see them being taken to task for causing problems. And that really hurts your good employees right along with them. So I think that was a huge deal right there. As far as for newer employees coming in, we really stepped up our employee orientation process to be a lot more robust, and this is definitely a much bigger avenue of focus than it used to be. More than that, there's periodic reviews just on the patient satisfaction aspects in each nursing department meeting and with each nurse every 2 weeks. So that in itself has also been a huge, huge help in the as we talked about before, the hardwiring process.
Were there any lessons learned or recommendations that you could make to other hospitals as they look at improving their customer service, Blake?
I think there's definitely, it has to be paralleled with your marketing piece and the other stuff that you're doing at the hospital that's positive, you know, because, you know, you don't have that many people who come into the hospital for, say, an admission. So word does travel fast by mouth, but positive word of mouth travels a whole lot slower than negative word of mouth. So you do have to kind of combine it with your marketing piece. I would also say patience. Rome wasn't built in a day, and satisfaction and quality scores don't improve in a quarter. So I think that's it. And kind of have confidence in the process. Just because you don't see an instantaneous upward spike doesn't mean that you should scrap the whole thing and grab bag and move into something else. That'd be my recommendations.
So in essence, it's kind of, you know, it's a quality. I've been working with rural hospitals for years and years, and that resiliency is, I'm kind of hearing you talking about, it's just, you're going to have your ups and downs with some of these projects, but if you're hanging in there and you're doing the right thing in this regard, that it's something that's going to improve over time. Am I hearing that from you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Anything that the RHPI program could be doing better or any improvements we could make, Blake?
Let's see. I would basically have to say from what we did, no, unless you could come in and replace the personnel for us. That's about the only thing I can think of. The process went really well for us. It really pointed out some weaknesses that we didn't notice before that were causing us issues. And now I give all credit to Ms. Gio. She did a great job.
Yeah, Mary, I want to commend Mary again, who has been kind of one of our star performers in the RHBOI program for years. Thanks, Blake. I appreciate it. I'm going to turn back to Sparta again. Any more of the outcomes in terms of you mentioned quite a number. Anything else to report on outcomes from this project to date?
Well, utilization review, having the patient in the right status from the beginning, that went from 87 to 99%. We think we've totally turned that around. We've trained all of our house supervisors to do UR when UR is not here, which is, you know, in the evenings, weekends, holidays. So they have finally mastered that. That's not an easy thing to do, but Sean's made them cheat sheets, and they've now got the books that we can go through, and we work directly with the doctors, and we understand the process and have finally nailed that. I also think that I've seen an improvement in the culture of the nursing staff, too, because they have bought into the swing bed program. They're out for the best interest of the hospital as well as themselves. I mean, we've got to have job security, and this is all part of it. They, at first, you would hear someone say, well, they're going to turn this place into a nursing home. You know, right away, they took that back. Really, they did. They're highly motivated to do things right. We've revised all of our flow charts, our nursing documentation, our CNA documentation, as well as social service and every other discipline in the swing bed area. But it just really has been a good outcome for us all the way around.
Yeah. Terry, an additional comment on that. We have a good rapport with our local long-term care facilities, and we do meet quarterly and look at ways to collaborate better for the transition of patient care. You know, and we recognize, and our long-term care facilities recognize, that not everyone is right for our swing bed program nor for their long-term care placement. So we recognize and try to target patients that are appropriate in the fact that they maybe need only a short stint of rehab or skilled nursing time, and therefore a long-term care bed placement is not appropriate. So we do recognize and try to put that patient in that right resource based on their needs.
Boy, that is so wise in that regard. You know, our center has been recommending to rural hospitals that they reach out to other providers in the community because, in essence, as we're moving into this value-based model, into ACOs and community care organizations, and we have states now that are entirely, their entire Medicaid population is being put into this kind of a managed care kind of population-based reimbursement mechanism. Our responsibility for the patient is going to extend beyond our hospital walls or beyond our swing bed walls, and starting to have those conversations with other long-term care providers. Mental health is another area that we're recommending as well, because we've got folks, we're going to have to partner with the mental health, the public health folks, et cetera. So I really like that idea of, you know, collaborating, communicating with other long-term care providers. That seems like a very, very smart move in that regard. Can you guys tell me a little bit about lessons learned or recommendations that you'd have for other hospitals, you know, based on your care management transitions of care project? What sort of lessons have you learned, or what can you share with others in regard to recommendations?
One thing I can say about that is to go in with an open mind and know the world of healthcare is changing on a daily basis, and not any of us know the answers. We need to take advantage of any opportunity to learn how to move forward that we can.
Anyone else? Let me just ask you a question. Do you folks see yourself in the future in a kind of population health-based care, accountable care type of arrangement? Is that something that you would anticipate in your future?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, both. Very interesting in that regard. And again, it's a place we think where rural hospitals can not only survive but prosper, but it definitely is going to take the kind of activities, the actions that both of these hospitals have demonstrated moving forward. What they're doing basically is building value, documenting that value, and kind of carving out a place in that future healthcare system. Both of those aspects are going to be extremely important. And I really think the conversation today has been of value. I'll ask the Sparta Hospital, is there anything else that we could do from the RHPI side to provide additional value or do anything differently?
I think you're doing a great job. Certainly there's a lot of consultant resources available, and I appreciate the fact that there seems to be a matching process in place where our needs are matched with the expertise that's available, and certainly we've had great experience with the project.
Okay, terrific. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers today. Does anybody have any questions? If you do, put what?
Star 2.
And you could ask any of our speakers. If you want to wait and just ask questions by email, you can send them to Leslie, and she can pass them on to the speakers, and we can put you in conversation as well. But I want to give any last-minute questions to the audience. Anybody want to ask a question at this particular point? Great. Then I want to thank all of you for being on the call. And as I said, especially thank our listeners and our speakers as well. So we're going to sign off now, and we will hopefully be seeing you later. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
The organizer has disconnected, and this conference will continue for 60 minutes.